head east to my old stomping ground. We last spoke when all this was just getting started in mid-April. He's here courtesy of the Believe Podcast Network, NFL draft analyst. Check out profootballnetwork.com. On Twitter, use the handle at Tony Pauline. Tony Pauline checks in. Tony, always appreciate the time. How are you and yours holding up during these zany times we live in?
Doing what we can. It's still kind of strange here in New York. There are a lot of things that are locked down. The city's a disaster. I was in New York City 2 weeks ago. You can't get anything to eat. There's nothing to do in the city. It is what it is. I think people are starting to get a little bit aggravated, but maybe that's for a different show, a different topic altogether.
Yeah, East Coast aggravation. We could do a four-hour show. Outside of football, real quick, the last day of August, the sports world, baseball, and obviously fans where you are mourn the passing of the greatest Met of all, Tom Seaver. You know, he won Rookie of the Year when I was seven, so I always feel I lost a part of my childhood there. So your thoughts as a New York sports guy, one of the true Big Apple icons of the past century.
Yeah, not only am I a New York sports fan, I'm actually a Mets fan.
Oh, okay.
I'm a Mets season ticket holder. In fact, it's killing me that I haven't been able to get to Citi Field for any games this year because there's no fans, because it's such a beautiful place, and it's really such a reprieve to go there. I mean, it's sad. You knew it was coming. It was sort of like the Gary Carter situation where you knew Seaver was sick. We didn't have an idea as to how sick he was, but you knew it was not a good situation. A year ago, last summer of 2019, they had the 50th anniversary of the 69 World Series, and they brought just about everybody back that was still alive, but Seaver couldn't come. Seaver couldn't travel. So his family was here. They threw out the first pitch, and they named the street in front of Citi Field Seaver Way. I mean, it's sad. You know, Seaver was a hero, was a sports icon in New York. When you had guys like Joe Willie Namath playing for the Jets, you had the Knicks who won a championship with Clyde Frazier and Willis Reed. Even the Rangers were pretty good with guys like Rod Gilbert and my favorite Eddie Jockman, who was a big hero to people in this city. But Seaver was the guy who persisted, and people remember when the Mets traded him. What happened there? Mets brought him back, and the Mets lost him. It was just sad. It was inevitable, and everyone knew it was going to happen, but when it did, there was a lot of sadness in the city because of, what he meant.
Yeah, that June 15th, 1977, I was 16, and I remember a lot of tears when he was traded to the Reds. So, obviously a sad one. I got to hit you with another New York question. I grew up through the 70s when both the Jets and Giants failed to make even one playoff appearance. I think the Giants only had two winning seasons. Tony, for New York football fans, are we back in the 70s? Are the teams as damaged as it seems? Is it time to load up on the Jack Daniels?
I think if you're a Jets fan, and I also happen to be a Jets season ticket holder, the situation is dire, and it's primarily because the owner is a moron, and the coach basically can't coach his way out of a paper bag. Adam Gase is just a terrible head coach. And when you see the performances specifically of the offense that we have seen really since last season, and the owner comes out and calls Adam Gase a brilliant offensive mind, you're just setting yourself up for abuse. So I think things are really bad for the New York Jets. I think they could turn if they get a new coach. It's never going to change as long as Adam Gase is in charge. As far as the Giants are concerned, the Giants have shown signs of life. The Giants have given their fans some reason to be hopeful. I mean, under the Joe Judge regime, which is 2 weeks old, but they're competitive. They've come close. They lose Saquon Barkley, which is going to be an issue for them. But still, Daniel Jones is pretty good. And I think with the Giants, at least, they may only win six or seven games this year at most, but you can see things are heading in the right direction, where with the Jets, you don't know what direction it's heading.
Talking with Tony Pauline of ProFootballNetwork.com, the Believe Podcast Network. You mentioned Saquon. The injury is obviously horrible. And I saw the G-Men picked up Devonta Freeman, the former Falcon. And, of course, many listening are wondering, what does that mean fantasy-wise? So what's the word? Is he ready? Is he going to start? Is it going to be Deion Lewis? So what's the Giant running back situation like?
Well, they also have the kid from Clemson. I'm sorry?
Wayne Gallman. I forgot.
Exactly. And then they also, who kind of fell out of favor with Sherman for some reason, but I know that they're pretty, or someone in the organization are pretty high about Gallman, thought that he should have gotten more playing time the past couple of years than he did. I think the big problem for the Giants is their offensive line, except for their rookie left tackle, Andrew Thomas. The rest of the offensive line is a mess. Will Rodriguez has played pretty well, but the right side of the offensive line has been a disaster for the Giants, even for Daniel Jones. So as far as fantasy, I guess if the Giants keep running left behind Andrew Thomas, I think things will go well. But they've got some issues on that offensive line.
You know, when we spoke back in April, we talked about Justin Herbert as a prospect, and obviously there were questions. And again, it's one game, and he'll start again against the Panthers. But to just get thrown in there a few minutes before kickoff, what did you make of his debut, nearly knocking off the champs?
Oh, how could you not love it? I mean, and I think that's the perfect situation for Herbert. I think it's a situation where if he had to, you know, mull it over for a week or so, it may have been a different outcome for him. But the fact that he was thrown in at the last minute, you know, it was sort of not expected. I think that really played into him because he doesn't seem to really do all that well under the pressure of the spotlight. And he didn't have it until he stepped on the field. You can't knock the performance. I mean, he looked terrific. I mean, even at the end of the game there, I think he had something going on. Obviously, he's going to be starting, I think, now for the rest of the season, just as long as he doesn't implode. And, you know, the expectations are not really that high, I think, for the Los Angeles Chargers. So I think that puts Herbert in a good situation. I mean, the problems with Herbert is, you know, the question is about the leadership. The question is about, can he elevate the players around him? Can he be more than a game manager and use those incredible physical skills and get the most out of his game? The question about Herbert, the same question is about Marcus Mariota. Great physical skills, but very laid back and passive, which you don't want in the quarterback. Played well. I think the situation lended itself to Herbert playing well. You know, hopefully we'll see more of the same, you know, moving forward the rest of the 2020 season.
All right, as far as the college game, obviously it's a slow start. Big Ten, Pac-12 haven't played. We've had cancellations in the ACC, Big 12. SEC starts this weekend, and you're a talent evaluator. Nick Saban says Mac Jones is his guy. He had a five-star there. He had Bear Bryant's great-grandson, and we know Jones played really well against Michigan in the bowl game. What's your read on Jones, who I think he's now in his fourth season with the Tide program?
You know, we'll have to wait and see, but from my point of view right now, he's a college game manager that I don't think projects all that well to the next level. Now, you know, even though, you know, they had two receivers go in the first round last year, they still bring two receivers back that are exceptional talents, Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle. Smith is a first-round pick. Waddle's not far behind. They also have an incredible running back in Najee Harris. They lost Jedrick Wills, but they got a terrific left tackle. So the pieces are placed there for Jones to have, you know, a solid season. But I think compared to what we saw with Tua the previous 3 years, or most of the previous 3 years when he was healthy, is, you know, he's more of a game manager rather than the playmaker that Tua was. Got the pieces around them. I don't think the pressure's always on Alabama, but I don't think the extreme expectations are there as what they've been to comparatively the past few years. Very good game manager, but not a guy I think is going to be able to carry the team on his shoulders as we saw with Tua when he was healthy.
All right, talking with Tony Pauline. You know, your Twitter account's at Tony Pauline. I mentioned the website, and it's profootballnetwork.com. So for folks who hear you and want to follow you, you provide a real scope. So let the folks know what kind of coverage you provide if they want to, you know, especially for folks who are hearing you for the first time.
Well, the Pro Football Network covers everything, encompasses everything as far as football, metric type system, fantasy, betting. But as far as the NFL draft is concerned, I mean, it's nonstop go. It's 24/7. All summer long, I was writing reports on all the teams, their top prospects, who to look out for. We'll have to wait and see. Hopefully, you said the Big Ten's coming back. Looks good for the Pac-12. We have a game day blog every Saturday, which a lot of draft. We look at it primarily from an NFL draft perspective. Who's playing in those games that are next level prospects? How they're playing? What the word is on them in the scouting community? Are those underclassmen going to come out? Sprinkled in with some NFL news. So that's something that we've got running literally from 12 noon when the games initially kick off here in the East Coast to 12 midnight when they're finishing up on the West Coast. And then there's a lot of analysis through the week, risers and sliders. I've got a question and answer segment that goes up once a week, and we're going to be starting a live podcast tonight, so that should be fun.
Yeah, no, it's great coverage. A couple final thoughts. Joe Burrow, obviously the top overall pick, started with a loss. He had some moments. Then 4 days later in the Thursday nighter against Mayfield and the Browns, 3 touchdown passes. You mentioned betting, including the late one for the backdoor cover. So hearken back to your evaluation of him leading up to the draft and what you've seen early on.
I think we've seen a lot of the leadership skills that we saw at LSU. I mean, we saw a guy that basically, you know, as last year at the LSU was graded as a fifth-round pick, basically grabbed that LSU offense by the neck. He had some spectacular talent playing around him, no doubt about it. But he made the most of that talent, and we saw improvement every single week. And as I said, you know, on your show and other shows, it just seemed that the brighter the lights were shining, the better Joe Burrow played. And I think early on, we're seeing that on a team that's fractionally as talented, if you will, on the NFL level, as the team he led last year at LSU. So I think, you know, all signs are pointing north for Joe Burrow. There's been really no speed bumps. There's no major hurdles in his play. And right now, it looks like the Bengals made the right choice.
Lastly, I want to run you out to our neck of the woods because we're the voice of the Seahawks here. And, of course, coming out of Wisconsin, nobody really knew exactly what to expect as Russell Wilson, you know, ended up a third-round pick. And, of course, he owned it since. What do you recall thinking of him coming out of college and how he's now graduated to where he's one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yeah, Wisconsin by way of North Carolina State.
Right.
Don't forget
right,
about
right.
that. Now, yep. You know, I had my problems, if you will, up at the selection at the time because if you remember, right before the draft, they had handed Matt Flynn a huge free agent contract. And
right.
Matt Flynn was basically penned in as the starter for the Seattle Seahawks. So I wondered why they would, you know, take a guy in the third round when they gave Flynn such a huge free agent contract. Obviously, it worked out. I think what you're seeing a similar thing with Kyler Murray in Arizona right now. You know, he was a mature athlete. He wasn't just a good player on the college football field, but he was also an amateur baseball player and a pretty good amateur baseball player, just like Kyler Murray. And I think when you have that sort of mature athlete who, you know, has had to put up with different things and basically, you know, he's just not just the star that's catered to. He's minor league baseball. He's got to get his rear end out of bed early. He's got to, you know, get to practice. He's got to prove himself time and time again. I think that really puts a lot of these guys, the Russell Wilsons, the Kyler Murrays, ahead of the curve. And I think that was a major advantage that people are missing out. Did I think he was going to turn out as good as he did? No, but he's a physically talented guy who's got, you know, very level-headed, knows what he's doing, very disciplined, and, you know, enjoys what he's doing.
Folks, he's Tony Pauline of the Believe Podcast Network. Check out profootballnetwork.com. On Twitter, it's at Tony Pauline. You got the new podcast coming up. Great stuff as always, Tony. I really appreciate your time. Wishing you and yours well, and absolutely look forward to catching up again down the road.
Thank you for having me.
All right, have a good one.